Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a Saturday morning program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. With us this morning, Nebula and Hugo Award nominee, William Shun. And the Nebulas, they won't be given out for, hours yet. Stay tuned.
and drove to Major Town. Gun control to Major Town. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Gun control to Major Town. Commencing countdown, engines on. Check ignition and may God's love be with you.
The unit. It's all the same to me. Oh, can you see? 'Cause I'm the Lord of the universe. It's best you don't mess with me, 'cause I'll stomp on you.
This is WBAI in New York City. Listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio at 99.5 FM. We have fewer guests this week than last week, because last week we had 10. And that was the writers' group Altered Fluid. That was fun. That was the second time we've done the experiment of having a writers' group actually critique a story on the air. This is, I would think, one of the most frightening. I think it's frightening enough for a writer to hand a story out to a group of people, of hopefully peers, and have it critiqued just among those folk. But I think the idea of doing that on live on the radio and then taking phone calls, that's brave. And I thought it was interesting. So it's something we've done that twice now, and we will do it again at some point. And so this week, a person who formed a writers' group that was a prime source of fine guests for Hour of the Wolf for many years. Is our guest this morning, William Shun. So say good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Jim.
Okay, well, that's close. Do that again. I don't think I actually have your mic on.
Oh, good morning.
Yeah. Oh, I do.
Oh, good.
And this is a special week in the world of Skiffydom. That is to say that aside from, well, we all know that it's a pitching week here at WBAI. This is fundraising time. But I'll be fundraising this week and next week, and also actually on at least one other program this week with some very special premiums that you can take advantage of. And actually, you can do that this morning. But this week, many, many of the great science fiction writers are in town this week because it's the Nebula Awards. There are two most major awards in science fiction, the Hugos and the Nebulas. The Hugos are a fan award. Anybody who is a member of the World Science Fiction Convention, which is anybody who pays for it, can vote for that, can nominate and vote. And I think they get as many as 1,000 people or so voting on the Hugos, sometimes more, sometimes less, and, you know, it depends on the categories. The Nebula Awards are a peer award and are given out by the organization known as Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America, CEFWA. And the Hugo is probably the more popular award for marketing. The Nebula is probably the more prestigious in terms, well, it's a peer award, and that says a lot more. It's like, I won't say the difference between the People's Choice Award and the Academy's quite, but in a very, very rough speaking, the difference being that both these awards are worthwhile, both the Hugos and the Nebulas. So, we have a lot of people been coming into town, and CEFWA has been very good in helping me acquire guests and things like that. So, Wednesday, I interviewed a person who was on this program in its very first year. This program beginning in 1972, Peter S. Beagle. And I recorded an interview with him at Tor Books, and we recorded like 3 hours. Plus, I've got some of his folk music and a reading, so that's probably going to be a two-parter somewhere. Then yesterday, Friday, at the hotel, which is conveniently close to WBAI, but doesn't do me much good because I have to get some sleep. I was able to conduct interviews with Nancy Kress, Nancy Jane Moore, Elaine Isaac, Connie Willis, somebody I've always wanted to interview, and Nancy Kress. So Connie Willis and Nancy Kress right there. These are like, okay, two big checks on my life list. And a fascinating gentleman by the name of Mark Zakri, who's a primarily a television producer and writer, but he's also written some best-selling fantasy. Today, I will be interviewing Ron Goulart, together Jim Kelly and John Kessel, Esther Friesner, wonderful fantasy writer, and Ronald D. Moore, guy who writes something about turtles, Galapagos or something.
Something like that.
Yeah, I have to print out for him. There was a cartoon in the New Yorker years ago, which a listener just sent me because I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. It was a favorite cartoon. It's just a picture of this big metal turtle in space. and the caption read, Battlestar Galapagos. And ever since then, this is from the 70s, from the New Yorker, and ever since then, I just call the show Galapagos. And even people that don't know what I'm talking to in context go, yeah, right. Ron has not seen the cartoon. I mentioned him last night. I'm going to give him a copy. But he's going to the theater today, and he's going to see Frost Nixon. And when he comes out, I'll be recording an interview with him. Then the Nebula Award ceremony tonight, and then tomorrow I'll be interviewing James Gunn and Jen Stevenson. Whew. I'm going to have a lot of shows in the can. But the morning of the nebulas, there's nothing cooler than having a nominee live on the air. And this is something I've done several times. And I've had, since Scott Card, Orson Scott Card, did the show, I don't know what year, but we can figure it out, because he was nominated for a book called Speaker for the Dead.
86 or 87,
that sounds
something
about
like that.
Right. And which is probably not necessarily his best book, but it's my favorite of his books. And I think some might argue his best novel, perhaps. What do you think?
It's certainly up there.
I like
Speaker for the Dead better than Ender's Game.
Yes, same. I like the novella of Ender's Game.
Yeah.
As opposed to I don't dislike the novel, but I recommend the novella and then go straight to Speaker for the Dead.
Yes, yes.
And I think that's the best of the Ender series.
I think it is also, by far. There are parts of Xenocide that I like, mostly one segment of that novel that was published originally as a novella also. Yeah. Is very good, Gloriously Bright.
Yes. And then there's his Alvin series. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he's a fine, wonderful writer. But
oh, yeah.
But the morning he was on for Speaker for the Dead and he was convinced that he was not going to win, he won. But who knows? But Bill Shun, who's been a guest on this program several times, is nominated. This is not your first nomination.
This is my second Nebula nomination.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Your first one was?
My first one was in 2002 for my novelette, Dance of the Yellow-Breasted Luddites.
Of course, which you read on this program.
I actually don't think I did.
Are you sure about
I'm
that?
Pretty sure. That might have been a little too long to read on the air.
You didn't do that here or at a reading that I recorded?
Probably not.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't think I've actually ever read that story.
Interesting.
Aloud.
Okay,
yeah.
I remember this. It's a wonderful story.
Thank you.
Yes, and being a computer person, you read it, you'll understand. But this year you are nominated for Inclination.
Yes.
A novella, which is longer than a novelette. Shorter
right.
than a novel, longer than a novelette. The Hugos have 80 different categories of stuff and go on forever. The Nebulas have only 5 categories, and then they also give out a separate award, the Andre Norton Award. But they also do a Grandmaster speech and an author emeritus thing. So it takes just as long as the Hugos, Lord help us.
Yes, it should be a very full evening this evening.
Yes, I think so. The Toastmaster is Ron Moore, the aforementioned Ron Moore, who is author and co-producer of the current Battlestar Galactica, which is a very, very, very surprisingly well-written, surprisingly because of the legacy of Battlestar Galactica, which is a campy, rather sucky example of science fiction programming of the 70s.
Yes.
Which was filled with a lot of sucky science fiction programming, exemplified by Battlestar Galactica. So when Ron Moore brought it back, it was like, why? And when you watch it, you went, oh. Which is quite something. I'm wondering if we should go through the nominations or anything, or I can do that next week also, which is also going to be a pitching show. That might be, but I might also be playing tapes. But I just want to mention that. There's an amazing – I do – I want to mention some of them because I want to just say people who've been on this show, who've been nominated. Because, yes, this is a morning where you can call and pledge to WBAI and show your support. So let
Very
me just
good point.
So let me just tell you, if you have been a regular listener to this show, in the past you might have heard any number of times – Rick Bowes, Richard Bowes, who's nominated for the novel From the Files of the Time Rangers, or perhaps Jeff Ford with The Girl in the Glass, who's been on the show twice, or, oh, about 8 months ago, you might have heard Ellen Kushner, whose novel The Privilege of the Sword is nominated. I think years ago I had recorded Will McCarthy. And that's a novel. So there's one. So there's two nominees: Joe Walton and Jack McDivitt, who've not yet been on this program. Okay, Jim Patrick Kelly has been on this show, and I'll be interviewing him later today. And he's nominated for Burn from Tachyon. Bill Shun is with us right now with Inclination. Michael A. Burstein has not only been on his show, but his brother is an intermittent WBAI staff member and programmer, Dave Burstein. I've never had Paul Melko on the air, who's nominated for a novella as well. Novelettes, let's see. Peter S. Beagle and Delia Sherman, Delia on this show not long ago. And Chris Barzak, who's nominated, will be on this show live in August. And short story, Liz Hand has been on this program, Elizabeth Hand. Esther Friesner has not actually been live on the program. I've recorded her elsewhere, but I'll be doing a show with her later today. So, you know, so 12 hours from now, I can say that. Dora Goss, Theodora Goss, has been on this program from readings that she has done at KGB, mm-hmm. Fantastic Fiction Series. And nobody for Script has yet been on this program, and I don't believe I've ever met any of them. The writers for Best Script, by the way, are, I'll name the properties, are Batman Begins, Battlestar Galactica, Unfinished Business, which is a decent episode, Doctor Who, The Girl in the Fireplace by Stephen Moffat, and Howl's Moving Castle by a bunch of folk, including, of course, Miyazaki-san. But I, of course, will be rooting for The Girl in the Fireplace. And last year, Stephen Moffat won, we will point out, for The Empty Child. And slash The Doctor Dances, which is a two-part, and was the best Doctor Who of that season. And The Girl in the Fireplace was the best Doctor Who of last season. So I know you actually went to the big premiere or something for Howl's Moving Castle.
I did go to the Howl's Moving Castle premiere.
Yeah.
It was at the Museum of Modern Art.
Uh-huh.
And Miyazaki made an appearance, mm-hmm. quite startlingly to everyone who was in attendance.
Yeah,
he just wandered to the front of the theater and waved and then was escorted out again. By his honor guard. It's not like he was thrown out of the theater.
What was it? Like John Lasseter was moving him around or something like that? John Lasseter being head of Pixar. Well, not head of Pixar, but the animator. And I guess at this point, actually, Walt Disney Animation, since they've merged and Pixar sort of taken much of that over.
Right.
And whenever I hear – I'm not a big fan of anime. Of any form of anime. It's just never appealed to me. And John Lasseter, whose work appeals to me a great deal, reveres the work. So I know that this is a personal taste issue and not a whatever. It's just something about that style that...
I don't care for all anime, but I adore Miyazaki's films. And later this summer, when my wife and I visit Japan, we're going to the Studio Ghibli Museum in Tokyo. That's going to be an important stop on our tour.
Yes. The thing for me is it's just the style. I don't care for the style. I like full motion animation, which, of course, they are fully capable of because there's incredible moving parts and some computer work in their work. I watched Princess Mononoke, and I've got to admit, it didn't do anything for me.
Probably not the one to start with.
Yeah, and that's what I started with, I'm afraid. And then I saw the beginnings of Spirited Away, and I couldn't get past the first 10 minutes. Another time, I saw a later portion on TV of Spirited Away, and that did grab me. So maybe I didn't give it enough of a chance.
Possibly. I think Spirited Away is his finest film.
Uh-huh.
A couple of other good ones are My Neighbor Totoro.
I've heard good things. Yeah. I heard good things about that.
Yeah, and Kiki's Delivery Service. Very highly recommended. Every time my wife and I watch that, we're sobbing through almost the entire movie.
Ah, yeah.
But it's a very, very sweet, very inventive film.
But the reason you're going to Japan is Inclination is not only nominated for a Nebula.
This is true. It is also nominated for the Hugo Award this year.
Yeah. That is a rare, not certainly not unheard of, but it has become – sometimes the awards are – they do not mirror each other a great deal. I think that there is, I think, one other – double nominee this year?
Yes.
And only one?
Yes. My colleague, Paul Melko, who is also nominated in the novella category, is up for the Nebula and the Hugo this year.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is both those novellas appeared in the same issue of Asimov's last year.
Ooh.
We were the bookends to a double issue, April-May 2006.
Yeah. So good issue.
Good issue.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I think Paul's story is very, very fine. Mm-hmm. The Walls of the Universe.
Yeah. Well, this is one of those things where, you know, one doesn't just say it's an honor to be nominated, but where one says that nothing bad gets nominated, particularly in the Nebulas. One can argue about the Hugos being a fan award and the way popularity works, you know, a crafted website versus Web 2.0 might be a modern comparison for that kind of thing. Anything that's nominated is good. Inclination is certainly a fine story.
Thank you very much.
And
that story, by the way, is available in several different forms for free online.
Ah!
Asimov's has published all of their Hugo nominees online.
Mm-hmm.
So at asimovs.com, there's a prominent link to all their Hugo-nominated stories. And Asimov's has 10 stories on the ballot, on the Hugo ballot this year.
They have been dominating.
Yes.
Especially since sci fiction sort of fell off the face
right.
of the earth because
right.
they decided that whatever.
But also in audio form, you can get Inclination at my website at www.shun.net/inclination. I've made available...
That's Shun with two N's.
Two N's. Shunn. I've made available 3 MP3 files, which encompass the full text of the story, and they're Creative Commons licensed. You can download them. You can repost them as long as you don't alter the files mm-hmm. and so forth. And it's about 2 hours and 10 minutes of reading.
So, and let me point out, having read all these nominees, oh, and the Andre Norton Award, I didn't. Both Justine Larbalestier and Scott Westerfeld, who was nominated for 2, have been on this show in the last year. So I mention all this by way of saying we've brought you a lot of good stuff on this program, and this is listener-sponsored radio, and I'm actually not supposed to be having a guest on this morning. I'm supposed to be doing nothing but reciting a phone number and telling you to call it to pay. So we're going to try to skirt that by doing both. And we have incentives. We have premiums. And I'm not going to pitch these heavily this week. I will next week. But let me tell you, this is good stuff. Basically, for a mere $275, you can get 5 volumes of novels by Octavia Butler. This is, I didn't even bother bringing the list with me. Just trust me.
All you need to know is it's Octavia Butler.
Yeah, and these are her 5 best works. It includes both of the Sauer novels and the Lilith series and all that. And these are gorgeous new editions that have come out from Hachette Books, formerly Warner Books, but now Hachette. And we have had copies donated to the radio station by Hachette. And $275 gets you a complete collection of these editions. I think Wild Seed is among them as well. And Farthing, her Fledgling, her final novel. And for $100... and with that, if you pledge, I will be. I am producing a CD of various tributes to Octavia Butler from such sources as this event that was held recently at Human Books, an excerpt from Octavia accepting the Langston Hughes Award, an interview that I did with her. November before last, not long before she tragically died. And blah, 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 blah. Oh, yes, it's a big event at the New York Public Library. So you will get that with those books. The other premium is The New Moon's Arms, a novel by Nalo Hopkinson. And that's for $100. And with that, you will get an interview with Nalo Hopkinson. That was broadcast on this program. Actually, a mere whenever Lunacon was. So I guess about 6 or 7 weeks ago. And she's a great writer. So what you do is you call Sister from Another Planet. Well, she's the tally. Andrea Clark is our tally this morning. The woman who does the show, Sister from Another Planet, at 212-209-2900. Sorry. 212-209-2950. That's it. Our normal number, but 50 on the end. 212-209-2950. And any amount, $25 or more, makes you a member of WBAI. $100 gets you a copy of that Nalo Hopkinson book, and $275 gets you the Octavia Butler Omnibus, both of which come with exclusively, because I'm producing them now, exclusive CDs, audio CDs of each of these, work of each of these people. So that's it. And you support WBAI, listener-sponsored radio, and you show the powers that be at WBAI that this is a form of radio that you support and you want to be on WBAI. And I really need you to do that this morning because I'm doing a show with a guest, which I'm about to get back to, instead of spending all the 2 hours just reciting that phone number, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. See, you could be listening to 2 hours of that or to William Shun read and talk about his work on an important day in any writer's life, a Nebula nominee day. So his second and hopefully far from his last as a Nebula nominee. So I would like to see at least a call or two. 212-209-2950. And because we get calls now, I won't be doing heavy pitching later. You see, that's the idea. So, you know, so we need preventative stuff happening here. So Gee, what's the stupidest question I can ask? How does it feel to be nominated, Bill? That's about the stupidest.
It feels good, though.
Yeah, yeah.
It may be the obvious question, but
yeah,
it's feeling pretty darn good this weekend.
Yeah, and it's looking at the nominees, I wouldn't venture a guess. I wouldn't venture a guess.
Jim Kelly and I were talking about this just last night.
Yeah.
And some of the categories we felt like we could call, but our own category, not a chance.
No, I don't.
It could go anyway. Those are good stories.
Those are good stories with good writers in each one of them. Yeah, I'm not sure. I might venture a guess, and I won't, on novel. I'm thinking maybe Jeff Ford and hoping for Rick, and of course would be delighted for Ellen, but
mm-hmm. I would be happy to see any of those. My call,
any of those, they're all good.
Yeah, yeah. My call is actually Farthing by Joe Walton, but
you see, now there's the problem. I haven't read that. I should.
I recommend it highly.
That's why I had the word farthing in my head when I said fledgling instead. I really have to read that, and I should interview her. She's around, but I've got so many interviews already. Where's she from?
She's Welsh originally, but she lives in eastern Canada. I don't recall if it's Montreal or Toronto.
Yeah, my thinking being, gee, is she, you know, she close to New York?
And yes,
because I'm giving priority to people from out of town this week. So that's
good plan.
Yeah.
But yeah, that novel's one of the alternate World War II genre.
That's been very popular lately.
Yeah.
The Doctor Who episode that won last year took place during the Blitz, and was very much an alternate thing. Connie Willis's next novel is in her Oxford University time travel series,
which is
her wonderful stuff, the Doomsday Book, and To Say Nothing of the Dog. Yeah, which is one of my favorites.
That's a delightful novel.
It absolutely is. And the next one is called All Clear, as in the signal for when the bombs will not be dropping. Two-volume novel.
I look forward to that.
Yeah, and it will be serio-comic, where the Doomsday Book, the first book in that series, is like, oh my God, it's about the plague. And, you know, that has all of the issues that a realistic look about the plague would have. And the second book is this Victorian romp launching from sort of a cross between Jerome K. Jerome and Tom Stoppard and seances, you know. So the third book is intended to be somewhere between these two. So, yeah, Blitz stuff is – World War II stuff has been very popular lately. Where did you get the inclination?
Inclination materialized when I was thinking about the question of what would happen if some parents had information about a child's health that could help a child live a better life, but withheld the knowledge of a possible cure from that child for the sake of their religious beliefs. And as I started thinking about this story, it of course became much more elaborate than that, and the description I've just provided is very far in the background of this story. But I wanted to write a story sort of on that topic and set it in my future Netherview station milieu, which is a giant space station about 1,000 years in the future with 2 million residents, where most of the residents are biomodified. However, there's a small group of religious believers who do not believe in altering their bodies in any form. And so the story becomes a culture clash between between these two distinct sets of people.
Yeah, well, what religious, I know in Judaism you're supposed to return the body to the grave the way it came out, which always brought up a question about circumcision. But that, I guess that was a health issue or what. But initially, I think there was some kind of Jewish law that you're not supposed to alter your body too much. So
and no tattooing and that sort of thing.
I think I'm not sure about pierced ears. I guess if somebody can be circumcised, I guess somebody else can have pierced ears. But. But certainly no tattooing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's most definitely against the religion. And there must be other religions. What other religions want the body returned as is?
I don't know any off the top of my head. I know.
Seems like it would be almost a common taboo.
Probably, yeah. In the religion I was raised in, Mormonism, tattooing is frowned upon, but I'm not sure I ever heard it actually. Ever heard a commandment against it mm-hmm. from across the pulpit. Certainly yeah. my father disapproved of it. And he didn't even want my sisters to get their ears pierced, frankly.
Yeah. So,
but I don't think that was religious. I think that was just...
Aesthetic. Yeah, yeah. I can actually appreciate that. But for me, it's a pure aesthetic. Nothing more than that. But I can actually understand and respect anybody who would say no, this is how it is. And I find the practices in some religions where you must have your body modified in one manner or another to be often jaw-droppingly, oh my God. I won't say objectionable, just jaw-droppingly.
Wow.
Yeah. Like they did that. Oh my, that must have been painful.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an easy sale inclination, as I recall. You didn't shop it around too far?
Actually, I shopped it around a few places. Uh-huh. It turned out to be a somewhat more difficult sale than I thought. But then Sheila Williams took over at Asimov's, and this was the first story I ever sent her. And she took it right off the bat.
Very good.
Yeah. I was very pleased with that. It was my first sale to Asimov's as well.
Ah, that's right. That's right. I remember you announcing that with great joy.
Yes.
Yes. Here's a question that I've had that I think some listeners might want to know, by the way. Just a little etiquette question. Probably shouldn't ask an agent, really. If a writer submits a story to a magazine and is turned down, and then another editor comes in to take over that magazine, can you resubmit that story?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's
absolutely.
What I thought. Yeah.
No problem with that.
Yeah.
No problem with that. Sheila's maybe a slightly different case of that, however, because she was the associate editor to Gardner Dozois for so many years at Asimov. So if I had submitted a story to her that Gardner had already seen, there's a good chance that Sheila may have already seen it also.
Right.
But, of course, she wasn't making the final decision then.
Yeah, so.
As she is now.
Yeah.
But in general, yeah, that's fine. Joe Haldeman told an interesting story about, I think it was his first sale or one of his first sales, when a new editor was coming in at Analog, and forgive me because I don't remember which editor was making the transition, had written Joe back about a submission saying, this is kind of interesting, but I suggest you might want to make these changes to it. Joe then resubmitted the story, having revised it, with a note saying, here's the story with the changes that you suggested. And the new incoming editor just took the story because it sounded like Joe was doing a revision that the previous editor had specifically asked for, and snuck his first sale in that way.
Uh-huh. Crafty.
Yes.
Yes. I'm sorry. I had something in mind, and it just flew the coop. My mind, I should remind listeners, is just a little bit burned. if you heard me describe my schedule this weekend, it is busy. Bills must be you must be a little bit adrenaline driven.
I'm balanced between adrenaline, caffeine, and sheer exhaustion at
yeah.
the moment.
But it's thank you for being here.
Oh, you're
this
welcome.
Morning.
It's always my pleasure, and I'm particularly happy to be here today.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you, last time you were on the show, I just happened to recall, it was August 17th, and I happened to know that you're leaving New York.
This is true.
But we'll be back on August 18th, so, which is a Saturday.
So, absolutely.
So I was thinking of asking you then, but I thought, no, it's Nebula Awards weekend. Let's have a nominee on, you know, so.
Happy to do it, as always.
Yeah. It is almost 6 a.m., so what I thought we would do is beg a little more, play a song, and then you will – how long is your reading this morning?
This is probably 35 to 40 minutes.
Ooh, then we better get started.
Okay.
Because that means after that I will have to do some serious pitching. So, but let me see if I can forestall some of that now. If we get some money now, we can pitch less later and talk to Bill more about his story in the Nebulas after.
So please call.
So please call. The number is 212-209-2950. $25 makes you a listener, sponsor, and member of WBAI. And that or over is highly thanked. But you take any donation, by the way, of $10 or over. But $25 makes you a listener sponsor. And shows your support not only for listener-sponsored radio. Mind you, not just, you know, supported, not a portion. This is where our money comes from. We're not doing the government grants thing. This is not a small portion. Our listener sponsorship percentage is over 90%. Over 90% of our budget is raised in these fundraising drives. This is not like NPR and PBS, where they get a percentage from corporate sources, a percentage from Congress, and then a percentage from their fundraising, where their on-air fundraising, which is largely just to prove to their other funders that, yes, we have support. Not that they don't need that money. But for us, it is our lifeblood. It is everything. It is what we go by. And for this show, it is how we show the powers that be at the station that a program on these airwaves for some 35 years on science fiction and fantasy is something that you, the listener, want and enjoy and support. So give us a call, 212-209-2950. And if you want to give more than $25, if you give $100, you can get The New Moon's Arm by Nalo Hopkinson, a wonderful science fiction writer of island background and Canadian citizenship at this point. And along with an interview and reading by Nalo. And if you really, really want to show your love, we have for $275 five volumes of novels, 10 novels in all, by the wondrous great Octavia Butler, along with portions of an interview and a collection of tributes to her work in life. So that's how you do it. That's how you call. We haven't gotten one call yet. Let us change that. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. I'd just like to see a couple of calls coming in and we can move on. We can transition to the next part of the show, which is going to be Bill Shun, William Shun, reading his work, an early piece.
Very early piece.
From the canon. I am looking forward to it. So Let's get those pledges in quickly. 212-209-2950. I know you folk always come through every year, and I really appreciate it. Every thon, you people do it. Oh, yeah, here's another thing. It's my 40th anniversary, okay? I came to WBAI May 1st, 1967, as a phone volunteer during our first ever fundraising drive. So I have been working here 40 years, 212 days. Weep for me and call 212-209-2950 and pledge. So these are all good reasons. We are going to continue by taking a musical break, but I'd rather not be pitching when we come back. I'd rather just have Bill read. So that's up to you, the listeners, by calling and pledging 212-209-2950. And Bill has given us some music. I don't even know what's next on the cut.
I think the next track would be some Steely Dan, a track called God Whacker.
Oh, great song.
Some good fantasy music.
Here we go. This is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifico Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. Three calls are currently coming in to pledge. Thank you very much. That's exactly what I wanted to see, and very much appreciated. And you can join them, 212-209-2950. Our guest this morning is Nebula Award nominee and a Hugo Award nominee, but today the awards are being given out for the Nebulas. William Shun, I've lost count of how many times you've been on the show. Five or six?
This should be number six.
Number six, yeah, seems right. Not counting times that I've recorded you at an event.
Right.
Speaking of events, very quickly, very briefly, this coming Wednesday at KGB Fantastic Fiction Series, 85 East 4th Street. Ellen Datlow will be featuring John Crowley, brilliant writer, and Sarah Langan, a wonderful writer. Both people who I've had at the New York Review of Science Fiction reading series. And really just, you know, Ellen, you know, this is a competition. How could they do that? So in revenge, if you come to the next New York Review of Science Fiction reading, I'll have Ellen and her people. That's, you know, that's how you do it. That's how you do it. Just glad hand everybody, because we're all one happy community. But these are two fine writers, and you should show up at that. 85 East 4th Street this Wednesday at 7 p.m. at the KGB Bar. Admission is free. And I'll be there recording it. Like, I haven't gotten enough shows this week. But the show at hand is... As mentioned, our guest is William Shun, S-H-U-N-N, to be found often at shun.net, where, and you're going to read for us.
Yes. I am going to read. I'm going to read a very early story called From Our Point of View, We Had Moved to the Left. And by way of quick introduction, this was my first professional sale. It came out in the February 1993 issue of FNSF, and it's going to be republished this summer in my chapbook, An Alternate History of the 21st Century. And it is – you have to look at it these days as an alternate history, I think. When it was first published in 93, it was sort of a forward-looking political story, and now events have moved past it, hopefully it will still be an entertaining read. From our point of view, we had moved to the left. In the end, I suppose it was nobody's fault, but the tempta-